Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, everyone. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Happy Martin Luther King Day, everybody. Later this morning, we will air some great stretches of conversation and music from our Martin Luther King celebration at the Brooklyn Museum yesterday. Toshi Regan, Cami Anderson, Touré, and others in about an hour. But we begin with the presidential race, including John Huntsman dropping out today. No surprise there. Another inexplicable statement from Mitt Romney, this time saying class should only be discussed in quiet rooms, and Stephen Colbert setting up an exploratory committee in South Carolina, mostly to make a mockery of super PACs, it seems. So we will hear some clips from each of these guys. With us for this are Andy Sullivan, Reuters White House correspondent, and Reed Epstein, national political reporter for Politico. He's been in South Carolina. Hello, Andy. Hello, Reed.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Good.
Good morning, Brian.
And I know the news cycle convention is that we lead with John Huntsman because he's the Today story. But let me begin with my ear-popping clip of the week from Mitt Romney. With all the talk of inequality in America now, he actually said last Wednesday that such topics don't belong in the public debate.
I think it's fine to talk about those things in quiet rooms and discussions about tax policy and the like. But the president has made this part of his campaign rally. Everywhere we go or he goes, we hear him talking about millionaires and billionaires and executives and Wall Street. And it's a very envy-oriented, attack-oriented approach, and I think it'll fail.
That was on the Today Show last Wednesday, Mitt Romney. And Reed, I thought it was the Victorian era, and someone told me we don't air our family laundry in public. What was Mitt Romney thinking, saying, well, we don't talk about inequality except in quiet rooms?
I think what, and not to carry water for Governor Romney here, but I think what he meant to say there was that it's something that for policymakers to talk about in more sort of more professional settings and not an appropriate matter for the campaign trail, the way that President Obama is making it. And that's a different argument to be had. But my sense is when he said quiet rooms, he didn't mean necessarily in private. He meant sort of in
hushed tones,
lower velocity, sort of lower tempo type situations.
We don't talk about raving inequality in America except in hushed terms. And after saying, Andy, that he likes to fire people who provide services to him and offering another candidate a $10,000 bet during a debate, is he just trying to make completely sure that everyone remembers he is the really rich guy in the race?
Well, he has campaigned on his business record this time around and has not been emphasizing his record as governor of Massachusetts so much. But I think the real worry that you've heard from Romney and from senior members of the Republican Party is that this is not really something that Republicans should be criticizing each other for, that, you know, they're the party of free markets and capitalism, and that it's really an inappropriate line of attack. And over the past week, I've been in South Carolina, and I've been asking a lot of voters about this. You know, here we're in a state where unemployment's 9.9%, and you'd think that if those sort of attacks would have any resonance, they would have it here. And people pretty much say, no, that doesn't bother me. I think the government is more responsible for the recession than big business and Wall Street, and that, you know, the nature of what he did as head of Bain Capital is, you know, that's what you do in business, is some stuff fails and some stuff succeeds. And these are like regular working people I'm talking to, not, you know, super fancy folks.
And Brian, remember at the last debate in New Hampshire, Rick Santorum went even farther than Mitt Romney and said that class doesn't exist as a function of American life, and tried to reframe the debate as middle income people as opposed to middle class.
And the end of the clip that we played, if the beginning was about discussing issues like that in quiet rooms, the end of it was that it's a very envy-oriented approach to raise these issues, and then he elaborated on that.
I think it's about envy. I think it's about class warfare. I think when you have a president encouraging the idea of dividing America based on 99% versus 1%, and those people who have been most successful will be in the 1%, you've opened up a whole new wave of approach to this country, which is entirely inconsistent with the concept of one nation under God.
And the American people, I believe,
in the final analysis, will reject it.
Inconsistent with the notion of one nation under God comes into it. There, Mitt Romney on the Today Show. So listeners, pretend this is a quiet room. And if you think discussion of class in America is important, how do you respond to Mitt Romney's suggestion that it's really about envy? Now, it's a quiet room. We won't talk about this too loudly or raise it with too many other people. It's just between us. Call us and respond to Mitt Romney if you care to. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. In a high-level meeting of our producers and me earlier this morning, we contemplated going off the air for an hour and just having this discussion in a quiet room. But we will take our chances with that. Are you jealous? Is that your Martin Luther King Day state of mind? Did he protest inequality because he was jealous too? What about you? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And admit it if it's true. Put yourself on the couch here because, you know, this is really a psychological argument. Politics motivated by the emotional state of jealousy. Are you jealous of Mitt Romney's silver spoon and Newt Gingrich's Tiffany bill and Mayor Bloomberg's everything? Are you concerned about the redistribution of wealth upward in recent decades because you are jealous, because you have a personality flaw? Pretend Reed and Andy here are your therapists and tell us what emotion does motivate your concern about this issue. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You can post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. As always, and while our calls are coming in, and my guests are Andy Sullivan, Reuters White House correspondent, and Reed Epstein, national political reporter for Politico, they've both been in South Carolina, we've got some clips of Newt Gingrich on Meet the Press and Stephen Colbert blurring the lines of what's real and what's fake on ABC this week yesterday after launching a presidential exploratory committee in South Carolina. Reed, you want to brief people who may not have heard this just in, you know, very short terms? What's the Colbert thing all about?
Well, the Colbert thing, the broader version of the Colbert thing is generally mocking the entire electoral system, the campaign finance system. If you remember several months ago when he started his super PAC before the Iowa caucuses, it was basically about mocking this idea that super PACs can exist to support a candidate independent of the candidate's campaign. And what he's doing now is his show on Thursday night, where he ceremoniously handed the super PAC over to Jon Stewart and announced himself as a candidate. Obviously, it's way too late for him to get on the ballot, and South Carolina doesn't allow write-ins in its primaries. But he's showing people in a way that, to an audience that wouldn't necessarily otherwise know about this, sort of how absurd the whole system that we have now is.
And we'll let him pick it up from there. He made very clear, by the way, as you called him a candidate, that he is not declaring a candidacy, just an exploratory committee. So we'll get to that. But, Andy, by contrast, what's the latest with Gingrich and his real so-called independent super PAC and the movie attacking Romney?
Well, I think the latest is Gingrich told them to back off. After the full film was released at the end of last week, it was widely panned as being really sort of over the top and inaccurate and not really painting a correct portrayal of what Romney did as head of Bain. And so Gingrich on Friday asked his super PAC, listen, you guys got to change this and take it off the air if it's inaccurate. And then he said later in the day that he was going to shift his line of attack to Romney's record as governor on things like guns and abortion and taxes. And over the weekend, Gingrich has been sort of hitting Romney on all that stuff. He's personally backed off his attacks on Bain. Yesterday, he was in Georgetown, South Carolina, which used to be home to a steel mill that was owned by Bain and put in bankruptcy. And Gingrich didn't really go after him there. That seemed like that would be a really good spot for him to do it.
But this 27-and-a-half-minute movie is still running, right?
I think you can, you know, pull it up on YouTube anytime you want.
And I was not clear after watching Gingrich on Meet the Press yesterday whether he was really telling his allies, the producers of this independently produced Super PAC movie, to pull it off, or whether he was kind of dancing around it and turning it into a challenge to Romney himself. And, of course, Gingrich is getting all kinds of blowback from other Republicans who call the movie anti-capitalist. So here's a clip. Gingrich on Meet the Press. He calls on his PAC to correct any errors in the film.
I promptly said I hope that they will edit it. I hope they will make it accurate. And I hope they won't show the film without being edited. And let me say that although all this is out in the open, because you cannot communicate privately with the, and under the law, I've said that publicly, and as I understand it, according to newspaper reports, Rick Tyler has said he's very prepared to edit the film, and he's, I think, submitted 5 questions to Governor Romney's campaign to get accuracy and clarity to edit the film.
So, Andy, that's why I thought, after hearing that answer, that he wasn't really pulling the film for inaccuracies. They were submitting 5 questions to Romney to get clarity, to see if there were inaccuracies. So they were really putting the onus back on Romney to answer some questions that he hasn't answered.
Yeah, Gingrich has done this over the past few days, saying, you know, Romney needs to more fully explain his job creation record while he was ahead of Bain. Because, as you recall, Romney for a while was saying he created 100,000 jobs while he was ahead of Bain. And he's since fudged that to tens of thousands of jobs. Gingrich has an interesting claim of his own he's come out with in the recent days. He said that he worked with President Reagan in the 1980s to create, I think, 18 million jobs, and that he worked hand-in-hand with President Clinton in the 1990s to create another 11 million jobs. So that's a lot of jobs.
Through tax-cutting policies and balancing the budget, indirectly creating those jobs is, I guess, his argument. Who's this guy Rick Tyler, who he says he can't communicate with directly because it's an independent PAC?
Rick Tyler is a longtime Gingrich aide who was with the speaker after he left Congress and stayed with him for most of that decade, and then jumped ship last June when the campaign seemed to be falling apart. And so in December, Rick set up this, helped set up this super PAC to aid Gingrich.
Independent also, super PAC.
I'm sorry?
This, his longtime aide setting up an independent super PAC.
Correct.
So this is exactly what Colbert is mocking, this whole independent super PAC thing, the allegedly independent super PACs that can spend unlimited money under the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision because the PACs are allegedly independent of the candidate. And this is the first presidential election test for how this will play out in the real world after the Citizens United ruling. So for a super PAC supporting Colbert, it's independently being run by somebody whose name you may recognize when he gets to it in this exchange with George Stephanopoulos.
There's a super PAC supporting you
yes.
in South Carolina. They released a new ad mm-hmm. overnight taking a very tough shot
I haven't
at
seen
Mitt Romney.
I have not seen this ad.
If Mitt Romney really believes
corporations are people, my friend,
then Mitt Romney is a serial killer. He's Mitt the Ripper.
Mitt Romney, a serial killer, Mitt the Ripper.
That's powerful stuff. That's powerful
stuff.
Doesn't
that cross the line?
I have nothing to do with that ad. I have no control over that ad. If anything in that ad is inaccurate, if he did not say corporations are people, and if he did not make his money cutting up corporate...
You're calling him a serial killer.
I am not calling anybody a serial killer. I can't tell Americans for a Better Tomorrow tomorrow what to do. It's not my super PAC, George. It's the super PAC of... I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. John Stewart. I believe it's a soft T. But listen, if that's not accurate, I hope they take it down. I don't know if Mitt Romney is a serial killer. That's a question he's going to have to answer.
Stephen Colbert with George Stephanopoulos on ABC This Week yesterday, blurring the lines between what's real and what's fake. Reed Epstein, national political reporter for Politico in South Carolina. That's Colbert's home state. And did he actually set up a real exploratory committee? And is John Stewart running a real independent super PAC as far as, you know, officialdom is concerned?
Officially all that Stewart needed to do to all that Stephen Colbert needed to do to transfer the super PAC was just to sign it over to John Stewart, which he appeared to do on the show Thursday night. And as far as, you know, setting up an exploratory committee, Colbert filed the paperwork with the Federal Election Commission. And as far as they're concerned, legally, he's exploring a run for president.
So I can only wonder how the Supreme Court majority is feeling these days, watching the fruits of their Citizens United decision play out for the first time in a presidential campaign. I guess it's beyond the scope of your job descriptions to speculate on what Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts might be thinking, watching Rick Tyler run the independent, quote-unquote, super PAC supporting Newt Gingrich independently, and John Stewart legally run the independent super PAC supporting Stephen Colbert.
Well, and, you know, the people running the independent super PAC supporting Rick Perry and Mitt Romney are former close aides to them also. So there's not, you know, not a whole lot of difference between what we're seeing in sort of the legitimate politics, if you want to call it that, versus the comedic politics.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to make a distinction between Gingrich and other candidates, just, you know, thought about the framing of this whole super PAC issue and the ruling that led to their contemporary manifestation, and what Colbert is doing to point it up. So let's take a few phone calls from people answering the question whether they are jealous and envious, as Romney was saying in the previous clip, and that's why you're thinking about class distinctions in America. Kevin in Teaneck, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. Jealous, no, but I can understand where the jealousy comes from with the things Romney has been saying.
Mm-hmm.
When most Americans think about jobs, they're thinking about, quote, real jobs, physical jobs, house building, farming, car manufacturing, laboring. They're not thinking about leveraged buyout companies like Bain Capital that are just buying. The only thing I agree with the guy from Texas from was his vulture capitalism line.
Rick Perry.
That's the problem with finance in America. We're not building jobs. We're building jobs in the financial sector, but not in real work, which is what people are looking for. And I think that's where the jealousy comes from.
Thank you very much. Sally in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Jealous, Sally?
Yes, I'm still here.
And are you jealous?
And I am not jealous at all. I think Romney, along with many of his other Republicans, just totally missed the whole point. In the first place, the notion that envy ought to be discussed in quiet rooms reminds me back in the not-too-far-distant political past when Bill Bradley was running for president and was asked to discuss his religion, and he commented very politely that, you know, yes, he was religious, but he believed that religion was a private and personal matter. Seems to me like discussions of class and wealth are private personal matters as well. But I also go back to my days when I worked at Fortune in the research department there, and I remember some particular, I don't even remember what it was, but a corporate CEO was explaining to other corporate CEOs about journalists, saying, you have to understand that some of these people aren't motivated by money. As long as they can pay their bills, that's all that matters to them.
And that was a revelation.
I just think Romney, he's in a different world. He's just in a different world and doesn't understand that those of us who are distressed about what he and some of the so-called one percenters have is that they just don't understand what they are doing to the rest of the country.
Sally, thank you for your call. And Reed Epstein, seriously, as national political reporter for Politico, this is going to be a challenge for Mitt Romney. And if he gets the nomination, it's going to be a bigger challenge in the general election than presumably it is during the Republican primary process. And that is to convince enough Americans that, to quote that caller, that he doesn't live in a different world. Right? I'm thinking of 1992 when George H.W. Bush didn't know what a scanner was at the supermarket cashier and couldn't cite the price of things.
Well, and clearly the Romney and his campaign have gone to great lengths to portray him as an everyman. If you remember, from the summer and fall, they would tweet pictures of him eating at a Subway sandwich restaurant, flying on Southwest Airlines, getting a haircut at a $15 haircut barbershop in Atlanta. So they realize that this is a spot where he's vulnerable and have gone to great lengths to counteract that. He had an issue with the air conditioning ducts on his campaign bus in Iowa, and the pictures that went out were of Romney on his hands and knees applying duct tape to it to keep the cold air from coming in. And so they know that this is something that he's going to have to wrestle with down the road, and I think you'll see more sort of overt acts from the campaign of him acting like a regular guy.
That'll be fun, acting like a regular guy and seeing how much he can pose as a regular guy. But Andy Sullivan, Reuters White House correspondent, it's not that he's rich that presents the challenge to him. Michael Bloomberg is rich, and nobody actually thinks he acts like a regular guy in New York City, but he's been relatively popular as mayor for a long, long time. The trick for Romney is going to be to convince people that he's not out of touch and that he's not inadvertently heartless in coming up what he thinks are the right policies, right?
Yeah, I think that will be a real challenge. And so far in the Republican primary, he's been able to deflect those challenges. But in a general election, he'll be dealing with a much different set of voters. And the Democrats and the Obama administration are pretty eager to have this discussion about inequality and the role of the financial industry. I mean, if you look over the last 30 years, there's been a pretty wide gap between who's benefited, who's seen the income gains, and it hasn't been most folks.
I want to touch on one thing that President Obama did on Friday, which he didn't say is campaign-oriented, but is campaign-oriented. He announced some shrinking of the federal government on Friday, some merging and consolidation, dare we use those private equity kinds of terms, and it's going to come with fewer jobs. Oh, by the way, interesting timing. While everybody's talking about Romney and that film, here's a clip of the president on Friday.
In this case, six is not better than one. Sometimes more is better. This is not one of those cases, because it produces redundancy and inefficiency. With the authority that I'm requesting today, we could consolidate them all into one department with one website, one phone number, one mission, helping American businesses succeed. That's a big idea.
So, Andy, what are the six, and what's the one that the president refers to?
I don't have a list of all six, but I think basically what he wants to do is split up the Commerce Department. One of President Obama's favorite examples of bureaucratic entanglement is he talks about salmon. When they're in fresh water, they're under jurisdiction of the Interior Department, and when they're in salt water, they're under the jurisdiction of the Commerce Department. He would resolve that particular problem by moving the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, known as NOAA. He'd move that into Interior, so then, hey, you get your salmon under the jurisdiction of one department. He'd break off the Census Department and other organizations that sort of collect statistical information into its own body. He would move the Small Business Administration up to a cabinet-level post, and I think the idea is he would take all the agencies that are focused on trade and put them under one roof. And this is already running into opposition from Congress. Democrats and Republicans are saying, hey, we sort of like how the body that is responsible for trade, the USTR, we like how they're on their own. That makes them nimble and able to, you know, not get entangled in bureaucratic stuff. So, Brian, I think you're right. As you said, this is, this might be more focused on with an eye towards a campaign than to actually getting something done. People say that there's only one real must-do piece of legislation in Washington this year, and that's extending the payroll tax. Everything else will pretty much be for show.
But, Reid, I presume that he's using the corporate term consolidation on purpose. And obviously he's elevating the Small Business Administration to cabinet level because it sends a message about a seriousness about small business. He's eliminating departments. That means he's hoping to have some credibility with respect to being for small government or only as much government as we actually need. I gather there are maybe not going to be layoffs, but by attrition, fewer federal workers as a result of this. So, you know, I don't know if he can sell that any more than Mitt Romney. That's his main concern, any more than Mitt Romney can sell himself being a regular guy.
Well, I mean, a couple things. One, I think we can assume that everything that the president does from now for the next 10 months is campaign-related, whether it comes under the letterhead of, you know, the reelection campaign of the White House. Everything that he does is done with an eye toward the reelection campaign from here on out. And, you know, given that, it's almost as if it doesn't matter so much whether this happens. It's what he's proposing, because he is doing things more with an eye towards the future, an eye towards influencing voters in critical swing states. And we know that small businesses poll, or the idea of small businesses in this country, poll extremely well, even though many of the rules, many of the tax regulations are written for big businesses and corporations because they're the ones who can afford the lobbyists to influence policy. Americans tend to like the idea of the mom and pop store much more than they like the idea of big corporations, which is why you see politicians, you know, describe themselves as small businessmen, why you see small business talked about in idealized terms on campaign trails. And why sort of you see things compared to small businesses.
So other than the political optics, Andy, are there smart people in Washington saying what impact they think this will have on government jobs or government services? Will anything be cut in a way that's going to hurt people who depend on things now, or will anything be done better as a result of the streamlining the president mentioned?
I think some trade analysts say we could certainly have that be dealt with in a more rational fashion, as well as services for small businesses like loans and things like that. In terms of the lost federal jobs, the number I saw is it would be 1,000 just through attrition, which is really pretty much a drop in the bucket when it comes to the federal workforce.
Will you both join me after the show in a quiet room to have the real conversation about class and inequality in America? Okay, you're busy in South Carolina.
No, we'll meet you at the headquarters of the Trilateral Commission.
Yes, in top secret. Andy Sullivan, Reuters White House correspondent, and Reed Epstein, national political reporter for Politico. Thank you both very much for starting us off on Luther King Day.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Again, a reminder that after the news at the top of the hour, we will air some great stretches of conversation and music from our Martin Luther King celebration at the museum in Brooklyn yesterday, the Brooklyn Museum. Toshi Regan, Cami Anderson, Teray, and others coming up after the news. But coming up next, Stephen Thrasher from The Village Voice and his list of the 100 most powerless in New York City. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you haven't heard yet, we are having a State of the Union watching party here in the green space. There will be musical theater produced by the Story Pirates before the speech. We will be live tweeting onto a screen alongside the president's address from here in the green space. There will be food and drink and other things. We will have a very good time, fun and serious fun at the State of the Union watching party in the green space here at WNYC on Tuesday night, January 24th. Tickets are available at thegreenspace.org. And before we leave this topic of inequality in America and whether it comes from envy, as Mitt Romney claims, or whether the politics of talking about inequality come from envy, as Mitt Romney claims. Let's take one more call that I think is coming at it from a different place than we heard so far today. This is Willa Mays in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, how are you? I just want to make a brief point about envy. I'm about 29. I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, and I'm from the hip-hop generation, so basically we revered people who, like Russell Simmons and Jay-Z and P. Diddy, who sort of were like these shining examples of upward mobility. And, you know, these people came from the projects, you know, broken homes, no fathers in the home, and, you know, Jay-Z is like half of a billionaire right now. So we were never jealous of these people. These people were inspirations to us. And I find that in this climate, for example, my girlfriend is a lawyer, and she's been out of work for about a year. She works extremely hard and assiduously on cover letters every single day. Mm-hmm. She barely has time to talk to me, you know, and she's trying to get a job. And we just find that we have these astronomical student loans, and we're not able to find reasonable jobs to allow us to have the part of the American dream that is just the ethos of this country.
Do you think the conspicuous bling in hip-hop culture comes in part from a kind of, envy is an insulting way to put it, aspiration to the wealth that poor people have seen around them in America that they were not privy to?
Absolutely. It's definitely, it's almost like a smack in the face to America to say that, you know, I'm from the projects, you know, but I've still attained these class symbols that were not allowed to us. And it's also a ploy to get the attention of people who may not have as much money. So it's definitely not all positive, but I definitely think it's not all negative either.
Willa Mace, thanks a lot. Call us again, okay?